We can't come to the North Dakota Petroleum Council annual meeting talking about oil and gas production without catching up with Lynn Helms, who is the chief regulator for the state of North Dakota of the oil and gas industry and the director of the Department of Mineral Rights. Hello, Mr. Helms.
Good morning, Scott. Great to be with you again.
Are you going to Husfest?
Oh, that's my plan.
Is
absolutely
it? Yeah. You're a Husfest kind of guy.
I am. Yeah. I married into a Norwegian family, and that whole culture is a big part of my life.
Looking forward to it. Have you ever met Carol Juven?
Oh, yes. I took a tour to Norway with Carol.
Did you?
And he arranged a tour over there for my family. If you want to get to know Norway, if you want to find out where to go over there, Carol is the source.
Yeah, he sure is. And I was going to tell you, he's going to be one of our guests.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. He's a treasure trove of great information. And, of course, my wife and I are headed there next year. So we're going to be off to Norway next summer and really looking forward to that fun event. That'll be in June, middle of June. So Carol will have all the info there. All right, so let's talk about the latest numbers, first of all. You've walked us through sort of month by month.
Mm-hmm.
This little effort and said, okay, it's coming. What's your assessment on the latest numbers to crunch?
Well, I think July numbers, Scott, and that's what we're talking about. The numbers are always a couple of months back because it takes oil and gas industry a month to get their numbers together and a month to get them reported to us. But the July numbers really reflect the optimism that you see here at this meeting. A new record in oil production, 1.27 million barrels a day. New record in gas production, 2.4 billion cubic feet a day. New record in well count, and on and on it goes. So 66 rigs operating today. You heard some talks yesterday about how incredibly efficient those rigs have become.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because that was one of the stats, and I don't even remember who said it. It was Kathy Nassett or who was going through the numbers. So 66 rigs equaling how much production?
66 rigs can produce 1.3 million feet of drill hole in a year. Just five short years ago, it took 200 rigs to do that.
Think about that, folks.
Absolutely.
And the expense and the impact on, you know, moving the rigs and the, you know, everything else, pretty incredible.
So when you look at the innovations, and we heard yesterday about the five biggest innovations, multi-well pad drilling, walking rigs, new motors, new bits, this industry is so innovative and reinvents itself continuously. That's why, you know, I've been 40 years associated with this industry, 20 working there and 20 regulating it, and it just repeatedly reinvents itself. It never gets old. It never gets boring. It's just such an exciting group of people to work with, entrepreneurs and innovators everywhere you look. And, you know, one of the things we talked about that's in the July numbers, so we're setting records everywhere, and that is creating an enormous amount of pressure on this gas capture situation that we have. You know that the Industrial Commission requires 85% capture today. We're just a month or just over a month away from stepping that up to 88% capture. We're trying to figure out how can this industry grow production and grow its employment and capture 88% of the gas. That is going to be a huge challenge.
Is the answer more gas processing plants?
Well, the long-term answer absolutely is more gas processing, gathering and compression in plants. They're being built. There's seven plants
incredible
being constructed right now.
A lot of money wrapped up in those. A lot of employees, a lot of opportunity.
No question. You're talking $1.5 billion for the plants themselves, another $1.5 billion for the pipe systems and compressors to deliver that gas to those plants. And yet, it won't be enough. By 2020, those plants will be completely full. And we're going to have to repeat that at least two more times. So the challenge I've been delivered by the Industrial Commission is, what kind of innovative things can we do to get the industry through this gas capture crunch without discouraging investment in gas plants and gas gathering and compression? And that's the balance that we always try to achieve in North Dakota when we regulate, when we try to help the industry to succeed.
And because you want that still for the long term to be there, So what do you do? What are short-term solutions that don't hamper the long-term investment?
Well, there's a couple of innovative ideas on the table today, and I think you're going to hear about them in a panel tomorrow. I'm going to tee them up a little bit when I talk ahead of that panel. One of them is produced gas storage. If we do that in the state of North Dakota, we'll be the first state to do that. And the Industrial Commission has approved $140,000 for these incredible people at EERC to study how technically and economically to store produced gas so that we can hang on to it, not flare it, while we build the infrastructure, and then later when we have the gas gathering and processing infrastructure, bring that gas through and turn it into profit or monetize it. So that's one of the innovative things that we're looking at. The governor is really excited about that opportunity, and we want to see it move forward. A big part of our job as regulators is to get out of the way.
You'd mentioned several times when, the gas capture rates were not ideal, that some of this was federal government and slowing permitting on gathering lines and whatnot. Has that caught up now, or is the federal government still part of this?
You know, Scott, they haven't fixed the problem. When we look at the gas capture numbers, we only missed the statewide goal by 1%. But when we look at the trust lands on the Fort Berthold Reservation, they missed it by 10%. And it is entirely due to right-of-way delays on the part of the whole process is incredibly slow. And then it can get stuck at multiple points along that process. So even if you fast-track a right-of-way, you're talking 455 days to get a right-of-way approved on trust lands on Fort Berthold. And so that's pulling the whole state gas capture down. But I do have to say the Bureau of Indian Affairs is very engaged. The tribe is very engaged in trying to work the kinks out of that system. And hopefully with Secretary Zinke's help, pressure from the top and the engagement of the people we have, we'll get that fixed. But we're a long ways from fixing it yet.
Quick answer on this, because we're going to come up against the break, and we'll have Lynn continue with us on the other side of the break. So if you have questions or comments, they're welcome at 258-0550. Should the industry be punished with a penalty because, the federal government's slow to approve permits?
No, they absolutely should not. And that's one reason that you see in the Industrial Commission's gas capture policy, there's a provision if you get a force majeure because of a delayed BIA right away, we will not punish you with production restrictions.
You got a pass there. And, of course, you'd just like them to fix it, right? Just
absolutely.
Start approving these. We'll take a short break. Come back with more. Lynn Helms joining us. 2018 North Dakota Petroleum Council annual meeting. Questions or comments for Lynn Helms, welcome at 258-0550, 701-258-0550. Mike and Hazen, do you have a question for Lynn today on the program?
I wanted to ask you about your trip to Norway. And when you go to Norway and you see how the people live and they have democratic socialism, are you going to come back and do the same regular things you do about saying democratic socialism doesn't work?
Yeah, to answer your question, yes. I've been to Norway. I enjoy Norway, but Norway is not a good, it's a utopia that's bizarre. Well, for one, it's a country largely built on oil and gas, right? So they pay for everything for everybody, but they do it because of oil and gas. Yet there's a green movement there that hates oil and gas. I talked to them. I was there. It is what it is. So, but no, I won't be coming back and suggest the Norway model. They do eat a little better than we do, though, I noticed.
I would have to agree, Scott.
Yeah, they're a little more fit,
They are. Yes.
So there was a little bit of inspiration that I got from that.
Right. You know? Their mass transit system is superior to ours. We could learn some things there. Hydroelectric power. A lot of that. So there are definitely some positive lessons to be learned.
It's just not a model when you look at the amount of people in Norway versus the amount of people in the United States that is, it doesn't work. Not to mention everything's easy when you have state-owned oil, right?
Absolutely.
And that much for how long?
It's
so
it's the size of Montana with the population of Houston and as you said, their sovereign wealth fund was all built on North Sea oil.
Amazing, yes. Anyway, Mike, so you can promote socialism, but I won't be anytime soon. Let's finish on the gas conversation we talked about earlier, Lynn. The governor yesterday in his address talked a little bit about, you know, how do we use all this gas? He's, you know, trying to spark a conversation of innovation, much like we were talking before. What's a bridge? We want the gas processing development and all of the gathering systems to continue, but we need something in the bridge because we got so much oil development. We can't, you know, stop that for the sake of, you know, getting the infrastructure for the gas up. And is there any idea on innovation that jumps off the page on how we use this gas or anything we do?
Well, there are a couple of ideas out there that are getting some traction, Scott, and one of them is gas-fired generation to back up the wind power. And so, you know, that's something that I think people are taking a hard look at. Another is that if we can reach this critical mass through maybe produced gas storage, the gas processing and gathering, you reach a point where you can begin to do value added, where you maybe have a large amount of gas stored. That provides you with the opportunity to bring in a petrochemical industry and everything begins to snowball. And so that's what we're looking at, is how can we start that snowball rolling and get it moving downhill. You know, the governor talked about using it to heat greenhouses and grow food here that we don't normally grow in North Dakota, because we have such a powerful ag industry and such great ag researchers at NDSU right here in Fargo.
So how would that work? You would take it at the source, close to the source, so you wouldn't have to move it far?
Exactly. I think the idea is, can we put up greenhouses out there close to the source of the gas so we don't need pipelines to move it a great distance? And can we begin to grow foods out there in western North Dakota on that soil that we've never grown before?
North Dakota bananas or something like that? Or what?
Well, he talked about blueberries.
Okay.
You know, so it'd be fruits and vegetables that we import in the wintertime that we might be able to grow here. And that's really his focus, is to create those synergies like between coal and oil and gas and ag, and to let the market really grow and grow our economy.
I'm looking forward to talking to him about that, because if nothing else, it'd be a great PR stunt. Right?
Oh.
You know, even if we just did this at a small scale, see if it works, and then because, you know, all of a sudden you're going to have, you know, the blueberry, you know, growers going, what the heck's going on there? You know, everybody else, I love it. How big of a hold on the growth of getting what you need to get all this is the lack of a workforce right now?
It's a really serious situation, Scott. And so we're sitting here basically with 66 rigs running. We've got 40, 41 frac crews. They can only keep up with those rigs. So that inventory of almost 1,000 non-completed wells is going nowhere. It's basically always going to be there until we can get a skilled workforce. Even the gas processing folks are subject to it. So we saw the Little Missouri 4 gas plant announced that they're going to be behind by about 5 or 6 months. That's because they needed 100 fabricators and welders, and they could only find 35 to 40. And so, again, the infrastructure is delayed. We're beginning to talk about some programs where we might be able to grow a workforce in these burgeoning student populations that we have in the West. As you heard from the McKenzie County School District, record enrollment. Heard the same thing out of Williston and Dickinson and Kildare. And so we're trying to work on a partnership between higher ed and K-12, where those students could graduate with a high school diploma, but with some online education that would let them go directly to work in the oil and gas business.
Whatever it takes.
Oh, right? Absolutely. And, you know, they already live here, so they're not worried about winters. And they're already living in western North Dakota, so they're not scared of the oil and gas business. So let's see if we can't engage them and turn them into our workforce.
Texter says, when is Adams County going to see oil rigs to compete with the windmills in the county?
Well, Adams County is outside the current conventional resources. It's a great text. However, my geologists, their work assignment between now and 2020, when the USGS gets here, is to identify the unconventional resources in counties like Adams. There are Red River shales that have the potential to be unconventional resources like the Bakken Shale. They just haven't been recognized and they haven't been tested. So, you know, we might be 5 to 10 years out. But
Another question. Please ask Len about if he thinks Slauson will get their permit for the new pad.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of speculation on the part of the federal government, but I believe they will. We've evaluated that pad and that drilling operation. It meets all the state regulations, and as far as I can tell, it meets all the Bureau of Land Management regulations. It may get appealed, like the torpedo pad did, but ultimately the rule of law will win, and I believe it'll get approved.
A few seconds for your answer. Price of oil right now continues to go up. Is that a good thing for North Dakota oil?
It is, in fact. We're pretty much right in the sweet spot in terms of gasoline price and oil price. But having that world oil price be $10 above West Texas allows people to use rail, which we need. We're going to have an increasing need for rail to offset the incremental cost of transportation by rail through that price differential. So it's a good thing for North Dakota crude.
Fascinating. Thanks, Len. Appreciate the update.
Glad to be here.